Howard Sankey is Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Melbourne. He specialises in the philosophy of science and the surrounding areas of epistemology, metaphysics, philosophy of language and mind.
Just give us a general overview of realism and scientific realism historically, like a grand sweeping generalisation of it.
Let me say something about scientific realism. It probably, modern scientific realism begins to get developed in the late 1950s and early 1960s, when you get various ideas of logical empiricism about the meaning of theoretical terms starting to run into some sort of trouble. And there's a series of papers by Hempel and Putnam and Grover Maxwell, early 1960s, developing a more realist perspective. I would say that modern contemporary scientific realism traces back to that stage. What is scientific realism? Now, some people, when they use that expression, might think that they're talking about realism and it's a scientific as opposed to an unscientific realism, but that's not the way I think of it. What I think of scientific realism as being is a view about the nature of science. So it's an interpretation of science that opposes anti-realist interpretations of science, such as instrumentalism and so forth. I think traditionally, scientific realism was thought of as a view about the aim of science. That is, science aims to get at something. There's some deep aim that science pursues. And the realist has typically said that the aim of science is truth. You want to get the truth about the world. Truth is usually understood in some fairly robust sense as some kind of correspondence. But what's really going to be constitutive of scientific realism is going to be an approach to the claims of theoretical science about unobservable entities, where unobservable means unobservable by humans with our senses unaided. So things like atoms and genes and electrons. And the scientific realist is going to say, well, when we do science, we really are trying to discover the truth about those unobservable things. Those are real things that exist. We're trying to discover the way the world is, and we should think of theoretical entities like atoms and electrons as genuine things, so that our words, atom and electron, refer to these independently existing things. That is, they're not fictions. The word atom is not just some sort of word that's used to help us predict what we observe. It's actually a word that's supposed to refer to something real. That would be sort of, in a nutshell, the way I think of scientific realism. Now, a lot of philosophers of science these days might not want to commit themselves on there being an aim of science, and so they might not characterize scientific realism in terms of the aim, but that's pretty much the way I've always understood the view.
I think it's interesting to point out that scientific realism also describes what the aim and the purpose of science is, which is often overlooked in terms of philosophical realism. A lot of people might just jump the gun and go to, oh, it's trying to get at reality by definition. Yes, but also it's important to highlight the aim of science in terms of predictive power, explanatory power, and making links between observables in an inductive and then deductive manner. I would also think, talking about Putman there, a good way to put realism in general, which is a slightly contentious issue as well by both counts, but a very basic broken down reductionist view of realism is there are entities and things that exist in the world, whether they're observable or unobservable, that exist independently of the human mind and the observer. And that breaks it away from the definition of idealism and the anti-realist camp. I also think that the observable, unobservable divide over years has slightly become more downplayed. It's sort of enough for a lot of scientists to deal with the indirect causes and consequences of unobservable entities. So, for example, that the Higgs boson hasn't been directly observed, but its indirect effects have been. So that used to be a very powerful area in the divide between realism and anti-realism, but perhaps not so much now. But are you happy? Is there anything else you'd like to say about realism being independent of the mind?
I think for a realist, it really is the case that we're going to want to be committed to there being a reality or world that exists independent of thought. So you can get people like Hillary Putnam at a certain stage who are going to be, they're going to be realists about electrons and so forth, but they might not be fully committed to some sort of metaphysical realism. So I would want to insist that scientific realism shouldn't just be realist about theoretical entities, but should also be realist in this kind of more metaphysical sense, where that's going to be the view that there is a world that exists independently of us. And I mean, that won't, in a sense, be enough to be a realist, because Kant could say something like that. So it's got to be, there's a world that exists independently of us, and somehow we're actually engaging with it. We're able to find out about it. We interact with it. We perceive it. So I agree. To be realist, you have to be committed to reality in a way that an idealist cannot help themselves to it as well. I mean, you can imagine an idealist saying something like, yeah, electrons exist, but all electrons are some kind of complicated thing happening in the mind. That doesn't strike me as being a realist view. There's got to be some robust sense in which there's a world that exists independently of us. Yeah. So I'm on deck, on board with that. Yeah.
Some wouldn't go as far as to push metaphysical reality, but I often find those kind of tenets to be, whilst plausible and understandable, I often find them to be slightly confusing in terms of, if you're going to say that this is what reality is, then you might as well not sit on the fence and go the extra mile and say this is metaphysical reality, instead of just saying it's a practical approach and science works and this is what it does, so I'm a scientific realist here, like a pragmatist might half be. I think there's a certain extent you might as well go the full to physical reality and say, oh, no, these entities aren't necessarily directly observable and these theories may change, but this is what is really happening and we can prove this with experiments and we can build it and adapt it with theories. There's a whole host of arguments that counterpose this in a tradition of anti-realism. A common one that many people know is obviously the theoretical ladenness of observations. That is, we don't come to observe these entities in a fresh, unique and clean way. They're always tainted by some kind of theoretical observation. That is, the atom and the particle could be conceived or conceptualized as something else in an alternative framework that isn't necessarily to do with the standard model of physics. Gravity has changed theoretically from Newton to Einstein. These kind of things, the issue of the unobserved entities, which perhaps isn't so pronounced these days. The pessimistic meta-induction argument is one that's still quite a resounding argument in the anti-realist camp. That is, that a lot of theories that were once at the time correct are now in the dustbin of history in terms of scientific theories being correct. And if you look at the present day, someone like Carl Stanford is at the University of California, he was saying to me that if you believe in scientific theories now, you're saying there's a type of exceptionism about present scientific theories, because history has always shown you that theories one way or another become redundant. So these are interesting points, but a lot of people still hold steadfast as speculative realism that's come out, structural realism that's come out. But for you, why aren't you an anti-realist? What is it about the anti-realist camp that you don't agree with?
Okay, so quickly on theory dependence of observation, I wouldn't see that as something that's going to lead towards anti-realism. To the extent that observation is influenced by theory, what that may do is sometimes lead us to make errors. So I would want to be not just a realist, but a fallibilist. So admitting that theory influences our observations means that sometimes our observations have been adversely influenced by theory, and so we've been led into error, and then we can later discover those errors and change our theories. So I think realism has to be fallibilist, and this is going to connect up with the pessimistic induction point. All right, so the pessimistic meta-induction is this claim that all past theories have been rejected as false, and so we've got good inductive grounds to assume that contemporary theories are going to be false as well. Well, all right, that should again reinforce our fallibilistic view. The thought is that science is telling us about the world, and the aim is to tell us about a world independent of us. The world exists independently of us, but we can make mistakes in our views about the world. I think one thing to say is we should be a little bit cautious about committing ourselves to the truth of contemporary theories and science. Scientific realists are going to talk about approximate truth, and they're going to say, look, science is changing all the time, but some things do get established. So atoms, you know, we should be pretty confident about atoms, pretty confident about electrons maybe, but, you know, quarks and so forth, perhaps less confident about. With the pessimistic induction, I think there's issues around, I mean, there's a variety of different ways of approaching it. You mentioned structural realism. So a series of moves have been to say, let's be realist about parts of our theories rather than about everything that our theories say. Structural realism is one version of that. It says, let's be realist about structure, not entities. Entity realism says, let's just be realist about the entities, not about the truth of the theories. An approach that Stathis Sillis and Philip Kitcher have been pushing is to say we should be realist about parts of theories that are responsible for the predictive success. But there are going to be parts of theories that don't play a role in the success. So the range of responses that have been given. Now, as for why I'm not an anti-realist, I think this is in part because scientific realism for me is part of a more global position that I guess is realist. That is, I'm not just a scientific realist, I'm also a common sense realist. I think I'm sitting at my table, the table exists, I exist, the world around me exists. I've got a fairly robust realist view about the world of objects that I interact with on a daily basis. And then I see scientific realism as kind of on a continuum with scientific realism. So with common sense realism, it's a kind of an outgrowth. And I have a hard time taking the rejection of common sense realism seriously. And I guess, I mean, maybe at the end of the day, that's just going to be some sort of gut feeling I have. I don't know. But it just, the idea that we shouldn't be realist about the world that we interact with strikes me as being hard to take too seriously. It's a kind of a Morian sort of thing. You know, I hold up my hands and I look at them. Yes, I could be dreaming, but I've thought about it. I don't think I am. I'm awake. So a fairly stubborn commitment to realism about observable objects, and then just thinking of scientific realism as something that you get to by sort of starting with common sense and then reasoning and experimenting and so forth. And so I don't really see scientific realism as a position that's isolated from common sense realism.
We'll get onto aspects of common sense realism and direct realism in a second, but just in terms of that, so you don't see a particular problem with the pessimistic meta-induction problem, because are you essentially saying that, okay, our theories are fallible, but they get worked on, so it's almost a treasure chest of scientific theories that each one we get slightly better at scientific theory?
It's something like that, yeah. I mean, I think we can have a certain amount of confidence in some really well-established bits of science, but we should be less confident about the cutting edge where all the work is being done. And I suspect for theoretical science, I'm going to retain a fairly fallibilistic view there. And I'm going to want to say we do get some things right, but that ultimately we're, you know, we may be getting things wrong, but we're improving and we're getting, you know, I want to say something like closer and closer to the truth. Now, how confident can I be? I don't think I should be super confident, because I don't think we're at the end of science yet. And I don't know, I'm not even sure what kind of sense to make of the idea of the end of science.
I just think if you look at big players in this school of thoughts, obviously Thomas Kuhn and Paradigm Shifts, which is obviously a monumental piece of work. Although I can practically understand what you're saying, clearly, and I think some theories are better than others, some have been more useful than others, some have predicted more than others and can be utilised in many different fields, obviously science, engineering, computing, etc. But a lot of the anti-realists, I think a lot of them think it's enough to say that the paradigm changes, so you're no longer getting at truth or reality. You've basically just moved the goalposts. So how gravity works from Newton to Einstein is a completely different conceptualization of gravity. We haven't improved or worked on gravity. We've just basically changed the definition of it. Now, that's a strong anti-realist argument, but you're saying practically that you don't particularly see the problem with that, which is fair enough, and some people would agree with that.
So, yeah, so if we're thinking about Kuhn on paradigm shifts, then the challenge from Kuhn and also from Feyerabend was largely put in terms of the claim that that succeeding paradigms are incommensurable with each other. And that's got, there's a number of different aspects to it. One aspect of it, the one I think you're thinking about, is that there is profound conceptual change in scientific theory change. And so basically, I'm not going to oppose the idea that there is conceptual change, and I'm not going to oppose the idea that there are some shifts in the meaning of scientific vocabulary, and that even occasionally whole new vocabulary is introduced and a transition from one theory to the next. But this is where I would appeal to work in the theory of reference, and my claim is simply going to be that there is not wholesale referential discontinuity from one paradigm to the next. There's a real world, it's independent of us. Earlier theories, if they've managed to refer to anything at all, will refer to some of the same things as later theories refer to. So we're going to be able to have a comparability of content. We're going to have some continuity of reference. So later theories could actually be telling us more about the same things that earlier theories were telling us about. So I'm just not that concerned by the idea of paradigm shift, because I don't think that things are as discontinuous as some people think.
You don't even have any sympathy for the pragmatist view that scientific practice and truth and reality is just what works and has the most predictive and explanatory power. Are you actually trying to go further than that and say that, no, it's getting at reality and with each step we're improving?
So on the pragmatist front, I actually think of my realism as containing a significant element of pragmatism, in that I think some of the arguments for realism are based on appeal to practice. Science works in practice, and I mean, even at the common sense level, we're interacting with the world in a practical way. But I guess where I differ from certain kind of pragmatists is that I want to take that pragmatist component and see it as contributing to a realist view. Roughly, the thought is that the right explanation of our successful practices is that we've got true beliefs about the world, or that we're representing the world well, or that we've pretty much got things right, or that the methods we use are truth conducive, or something like that. So, in a sense, I want to go along with the pragmatist, but I don't want to just sort of talk about what works, and we should accept theories as simply predictively successful devices. I try to appeal to practice as, in a sense, the basis for realism.
Talking about common sense realism, it's the first time I've heard it explicitly described as such. So in a second, I'll give you more time and opportunity to talk about that, and it's linked to scientific realism. But I'll just give you an example and tell me how comparable or similar it is to this scenario. So the philosopher Richard Dawood, who's a specialist in particle physics, he was saying that concept of reality and realism in general is much more pervasive and apparent in everyday life in terms of the natural world and the social world, in terms of its interactions within one another and with each other. It's kind of obvious that reality exists, or obviously wouldn't exist. There's also a certain extent that you would say that the whole field of evolution, even if it doesn't contain humans in it with human minds and human thoughts, would still exist in itself with just other animals. And evolution, obviously, in terms of why organisms developed, cause and effect, is based on this independent reality. And a separate point to this from Richard Dawood, which was causation and reality work in everyday scenarios. So obviously hunters and gatherers would have realized what a cause and effect is between an apple growing on a tree and when to pick it and when there's danger and when there's not danger. And just every day, it's like an old school correspondence theory of truth that just corresponds to data, and that reality just is something that the humans are part of and they can interact with on every day, or else it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So right now it's kind of reality that me and you are having this discussion and this podcast. Is that an aspect of common sense realism that you're talking about? Are you talking about something more?
So I certainly think that we engage with the world around us, that there are causes and effects and so forth, and that it's part of our everyday life that things are brought about. We know that there are causal connections and so forth. But when I'm talking about common sense realism, I'm not, in the same way that I talk about scientific realism, I'm not saying that there's a realism which is scientific and another realism which is unscientific. What I mean is it's realism about, it's a realist interpretation of the sciences. Common sense realism, it's really more to do with realism about the objects that we interact with at kind of an observable level, in a sense. So there's macro objects, tables and chairs and buildings and cars and food and other people. So I guess one way of thinking about it would be, if we make a distinction between theoretical entities which we can't observe with our senses unaided and observable entities which we can observe with our senses unaided, so then scientific realism is going to be realism about the theoretical entities that our theories tell us about that we can't directly observe. And then common sense realism is just going to be realism about the observable entities. In a sense, in the philosophy of science, we think more about scientific realism, but in straight epistemology, where we're thinking about skepticism about the external world, the common sense realist is the one who, against Cartesian radical external world skepticism, is going to say, no, there is a world outside of our minds, we exist in it, and we know it exists, and it, you know, examples, you know, here's my hand, here's my book, and so forth. So I'm not saying, I mean, there is a sense in which common sense realism is commonsensical, and it's the commonsensical thing for us to believe in, but when I describe common sense realism, I think what I'm doing is talking about realism about the everyday world. So, for example, Bas van Frassen, who is a constructive empiricist, an anti-realist in science, I think he would be a common sense realist. I think he would be a realist about what you can observe. His anti-realism kicks in the minute we're not able to observe something.
Are you talking about objects in the same sense that someone like Graham Harman is, or is it slightly different in terms of scientific realism?
I don't think I have a very sophisticated metaphysical theory about the nature of objects. So it's fairly basic. The kind of objects I'm thinking about are this. So there's a chair over next to my. The chair is an object. There's a door. The door's an object. There's a table. The table's an object. Maybe I'm an object. I think we probably don't usually think of humans as being objects, but there's the same way that a table or a chair is an object that takes up space, a human's going to wind up being an object. So it's not a sophisticated metaphysical view. It's just the view that the ordinary entities that we have to deal with every day, there are all these objects, and they exist. They exist many of them exist outside the mind. We've got interesting distinctions between those things that, like books and tables and chairs, ones I've been mentioning, that they're artifacts. They're things that humans have made, and so there is some human intention, some human mental activity that's gone into them. And then there are the other things that aren't artifacts, that are naturally occurring things. Both of those kinds of things exist, and they exist independently of us, despite the fact that we've had some input into the construction of the artifacts.
So it's not really dealing with a deep metaphysical analysis of objects in a Graham Harman sense, but it is very pragmatically minded in terms of we're dealing with stuff that's independent of us and we can clearly observe and interact with as objects like tables and chairs.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I know that there are sort of metaphysical theories about the nature of objects, and there's concerns about conditions of identity for objects, and whether they're, you know, there's issues about vagueness and so forth. But I'm just working a kind of a, here it is, a kind of a commonsensical notion of objects. It's the kind of things that we spend our day sort of walking around and kicking into these things. And when I go out of the door, I have to make sure I open the door, otherwise I'm going to run into it. We deal with these kind of physical objects in our life, and that's it's what I'm describing as common sense realism, is the view that these objects exist, but also that we, not just that they exist, but that we interact with them, that we're able to come to have knowledge of them, that we, you know, how do we find out the way things are? Well, we look at them. I look to see whether there's an umbrella in the corner. This is a kind of a simple epistemology that goes along with common sense realism too.
So, to be quite crude about it, essentially, it's almost a mirror reversal of when someone like Berkeley in idealism was saying that, how am I sure that these tables and chairs are independent of my mind? You're saying they quite clearly are, and we interact and touch with them every day, or else we'll be running into doors and sitting on the floor and missing chairs and hidden tables.
Yeah, and that's kind of the pragmatic component of the realism, because we interact with these things. And we know that we have to go around objects. We can't go through them.
Now, what is direct realism in your approach, and how does that tie into your other views on realism?
So this is something I've only begun to work on recently, but it really just comes in thinking about that common sense realism that I've just been describing. So I'm looking at a chair, and it seems to me that what I'm doing is I'm perceiving the chair. That what is the object of my perception? Well, it's the chair. Now, to say that the object that I'm perceiving is the chair, I would say that that's a direct realist view. Now, that contrasts with really a quite strong tradition in philosophy, which holds that when we are perceiving the world, what's really happening is that there is some kind of a mental entity which is the object of our perception. So an example of that in 20th century philosophy, early 20th century philosophy, we had the sense datum theorists. And the sense datum theorists thought that you needed to say that when you perceive an object, what you're actually perceiving is a sense datum. And the sense datum is something like a some sort of sensory content that is in the mind. And they thought you had to say that because if two people are looking at the same chair from a different point of view, they don't see the chair in the same way. So the thought is there must be something that they're actually seeing, which isn't the chair, it's something in their mind. And there are arguments about illusion and hallucination that are going to lead people to think that we ought to be saying that in perception, what we're doing is we've got something in the mind which is the object of perception, and then that object of the sense datum or whatever it is in the mind, well, it might be caused by something external to us, but we're not actually perceiving the thing external to us. So as I say, I've been started to work on this recently, and I'm beginning to think that it's quite important to not be an indirect realist, for example, a sense data theorist, because it looks like one of the bases of skepticism about the external world is this idea that we're not actually perceiving things in the world, we're perceiving something in the mind. Because if we're perceiving something in the mind, then there's this question what the relationship is between this mental object and the world outside of us. So we've not got no particular way of proving that this mental, this object in the mind does bear some relationship to something in the world outside of us. So there's a sense in which this thinking about perception in terms of what we're perceiving as a sense datum or some other mental content or mental object looks like it may actually be one of the fundamental causes of skepticism about the external world. So as I say, I've just started working on this recently, but it strikes me as being quite important as an important component of an overall realist view, not just to be a scientific realist and a common sense realist, but to also be a direct realist.
Are there also a lot of similarities and overlap? Have you thought of the areas of consciousness in terms of how senses are perceived by the brain and then turned from, you know, transmitters in the brain into subjective experiences and qualia? Is there like an overlap between that in terms of how one perceives and senses an object in the outside world and then how that's internally processed in the cognitive manner?
I mean, I don't want to deny anything about what we know about how vision works and the brain works and so forth. And I don't want to deny anything about we have experiences and so forth. But it's just the thought is that what we perceive is actually the thing in the world rather than the whatever's happening in the mind. All the mental experience and so forth, that's an important part of the story. But still the perception, I mean, there are going to be times when what we perceive might be internal to us, but when I'm looking at the chair, what I'm perceiving is something that, you know, it's an object that is not inside my brain or my skull. I don't like the idea of external object, but it is an external object. It's outside of the mind. What I'm not too clear about where qualia fit in. I don't know whether a qualia theorist is going to say the same thing as a sense datum theorist. Sense datum theorist is going to, I think, be committed to the view that what we perceive is the sense datum, and the sense datum is not in the object. It's something somewhere in the mind. I don't know whether the qualia theorist says that we perceive the qualia or whether the qualia just is the qualitative experience.
Because you're saying it's the sensation is actually in the object itself, as where a qualia theorist would be saying that it's internal after the object has been sensed and perceived, but you're saying it's actually external to that and in the object in the first place.
Well, I'd be happy for the sensation to be in me. It's just that the object that I'm perceiving is not in me. It's an external object. So I'm happy for there to be sensation or sensory experience that's tied up with my, you know, my nerve system or my different sensory modalities. But insofar as there is the thing that is being perceived, I want to say that it's the chair that I'm, you know, I'm looking at a chair. I'm seeing a chair. I'm not seeing something inside my mind. I maybe have experiences, that's true, but still the object of those experiences is the thing, is the chair.
So it's very much based on independent objective reality about the object that's external to the mind.
Yeah, so it really fits in well with the idea of, you know, full-blooded realism that has an objective mind and independent reality. And I think part of the motivation for this way of thinking is to try to be quite aggressive against the sort of philosophical tendencies towards a kind of skepticism towards the external world.
Before I let you go, I always ask the people that are on the podcast just to tell everyone what you're currently working on, if there's any research projects in the pipeline, any papers, any essays in books. Yeah.
So I'm writing three papers at present. I've recently completed a paper called The Demise of the Incommensurability Thesis. So I'm hoping that's the last paper I ever write about incommensurability, but that topic just seems to keep sort of swinging back every time I try to knock it out. Another paper I'm writing, and it's on my desk right now, is called Scientific Realism and the Conflict with Common Sense. And so that's a paper in which I argue that scientific realists actually face a sort of internal conflict. They need to figure out whether they're going to argue that scientific realism fits with common sense or whether they're going to argue that science sort of overthrows common sense. And what I'm trying to show is that if you're a scientific realist and you think common sense is mistaken and you're going to throw out or eliminate common sense, then you're removing the empirical basis for science, and so you've got no basis for scientific realism in the first place. And so I'm trying to argue that you need both common sense and science. So you need both common sense realism and scientific realism. And then the third paper I'm writing is a paper about Putnam's internal realism. Putnam himself, towards the end of his career, began to develop a direct realist view, and he recognized that his earlier tendency in a kind of idealist direction was tied up with the kind of things I was describing before about perception. So I'm writing a paper about the problems with Putnam's internal realism and then trying to show how his move to direct realism was actually the right way to go. And once I finish those things, I may go back and do a bit of work on epistemic relativism, but I'm not sure yet.